but it's true. A man can talk to the animals. It's a miracle. In a year from now, I guarantee, I'll be the marvel of the mammals, playing chess with camels. No more just a boring old MD.
And now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
...2018. Hope and Chris finish the last episode of Star Wars The Clone Wars. Luckily, dependable Dave Filoni and crew create Rebels with new characters, new places, and new adventures, thus keeping hope alive for this podcast. Welcome to J-Guys and Jedi.
I inhaled a little of my water, I'm sorry. Just leave that in there. Hi, everyone. Welcome to a brand new episode of J-Guys and Jedi, a weekly podcast covering every episode of Star Wars Rebels where we choke on water in the opening segment. In this episode, the Grand Inquisitor, Mr. Grande, continues his pursuit of the Ghost Crew while Ezra looks to make a connection with the Force. We're talking about gathering forces this week. How you doing, Chris?
Hold on a second. I'm good. Yeah, you warned me before the show about this.
You don't even know how hard I'm gonna be fangirling in this.
Oh boy.
Oh, you don't even know it, Chris. I had a hell of a fun time writing this episode, and it's actually in my notes of like there are several sections I rewatched at least like 3 or 4 or 5 times.
Oh, she's revved up, guys.
Oh, I'm so revved up. Well, how you doing this week?
Not bad, not bad. It was like 60 degrees here today.
I know. You guys just went through the polar vortex thing.
Yeah, we went through the polar vortex, and then like all of a sudden it swung another 70 degrees in the other direction.
We kind of had it here too. Like, it's not normal for us in February to have like highs in the 30s. Like, usually we have like highs in the 50s, and we've swung back too. We're going to be in like pushing 80 by midweek.
Jeez, yeah. Yeah, no, but it was amazing. The last 2 days, we pretty much burned off all the snow that we gathered in our first we had a storm, and then we had the polar vortex.
Didn't you say like forever ago when we were doing Clone Wars that you got a brand new like little porch chimney thing that you were gonna save the ashes? Did you do that?
I did. Yeah, I did, and I had actually, after the last storm, I actually put the ashes down our sidewalk and at the end of our driveway.
I remembered that, yeah.
Yep, they're on the ground now. Everything's melted away.
Aww.
So I don't even know if I'm sure the ashes sped it up, but the 50 and 60 degree weather did most of the work.
Yeah. I'm doing all this all right this week. I'm pulling a U from a couple months ago. I tweaked something in my back and my shoulder, so
Ooh. Sitting
hurts, and standing up and sitting down hurts. But once I'm standing, I'm pretty okay, unless I bend a certain way. But yeah, I'm just sitting here talking to you, and my back is like, you're sitting on me.
Yeah, I know all about that.
Yeah, it's like right in my low back where it connects to like the back of my hip. So like we're right above where I'm sitting, and my back is angry. It's all right, though. I just need to rest it. And when we're done, I'll put like a heating pad on it or some ice. We'll figure it out.
Do both. You alternate them.
Though, I did find out something this week that fucking blew my mind.
Uh-oh.
So I kind of knew this already. Like, this is a very common thing in like animation and comics and stuff where you very rarely use the color black for someone who has black hair, because it just doesn't look good in animation. It just looks like a void, and it doesn't look really good in comics because it just looks like a very flat void. So usually in comics and animation, when when somebody has quote unquote black hair, you use a very, very, very dark blue, like a very deep navy blue. And it looks black compared to all the other colors, but you don't actually use the color black. Well, I was talking with Megan, and her husband, Lauren, was like, yeah, Ezra has black hair. And I was like, it's definitely very blue. It's blue. He has naturally blue hair. There's no way he has black hair. And he's like, no, it's common in animation. I'm like, I know it's common in animation to do this, but he has black hair. He has blue hair. I mean, look at him. And I was like, look at season one and two. He's a fucking blueberry. So I look it up on Wikipedia. Canonically, Ezra has black hair. And I'm just like, why is his hair so blue then? And I just kind of sat there for like 10 minutes like, Ezra has black hair. This hurts my brain. But it's
yeah, so I mean, that blue is still a brighter blue than the normal dark hair blue.
Yeah, like, it makes sense when his hair is shorter. Like, it looks more darker because it's shorter. But in these earlier seasons, he has fucking blue hair. There's a reason they call him the blueberry. And I still am going to call him the blueberry forever.
My, like, 16-inch Ezra figure has black hair.
I don't have any extra figures, so I have nothing to compare it to. But, oh, now that I think about it, yeah, I don't have any. Well, I guess my cup, I have my Rebels cup right here, and it looked black except for in the highlights, which is clearly fucking blue.
Yeah, that's, that blue in his hair is sometimes a blue they'll use in highlights and comics and stuff, but it's usually never a solid blue like that.
Yeah, his hair is really solid blue most of the time. And it's just, it blew my mind, Chris, that he has black hair. And I was like, because I was arguing. I was like, no, for real, he has blue hair. And then I look it up on Wikipedia, and I was like, shut up, Lauren. And he was laughing on the phone at me. I was like, shut up, I need to process this information now. Oh my God, guys, I need to warn you. I'm fangirling so hard in this episode. You should just know that now. This is going to be
a deep breath.
This is going to be a Hope fangirling episode. You guys should just know that now. You should just understand that there will be screaming and squealing and squeeing and fanning and ovaries exploding. I had a lot of fun with this episode, and I think I had probably way more fun than I probably should have. But I had a jolly good old time this week.
I mean, hey, I like this episode, but okay, we'll see. I'm interested to. Well, I know it's got Grande in it, so.
It does have Grande in it. That's why I had such a good time on this episode. I blame Megan. She made me like his character more. She role plays him, and he's so lovely. And I blame Megan. Megan made me fall in love. She did it with Thrawn, and now she's doing it with Grande, and it's all Megan's fault. That's what happens when we roleplay and write fan fiction. We fall in love with fictional cartoon characters. That's why I'll never get married, because I'm already married to my fictional husbands. Oh, I did finish Heir to the Empire. You were absolutely right.
Well, you did better than I did.
Well, the thing that got me was... Because, okay, just so a reminder, everybody, I'm speaking at a Thrawn panel in April at 221bCon, so I'm trying to read the entire original Thrawn trilogy before then because I never read it. And hopefully Outbound Flight, I would like to get Outbound Flight in there if I can get it. I can't promise that I'll get it. So I was reading, but Chris was always like, Thrawn's not a real character. You can listen to our episode on the Thrawn novel several weeks ago that came out. But pretty much it was like, he seems like this great genius, but he always gets beaten. And that's how I felt at the end of this book. Because last week when we were talking about Empire Day, I kept saying that Ezra has a case of protagonistitis. And it's true. He's very protagonist-y. And that's how the end of this book felt. Because like the first half of the book was a slog. But I actually really enjoyed the second half of the book. The second half of the book is when the action picked up. Luke and Mara Jade had their evil meet cute. And she was all like, ugh, I'm going to kill you. But I'm actually going to marry you in the future. And like they have their evil meet cute. I like Talon Card's character. I even like the stuff with Han and Lando. Even though I really don't have many deep feelings for Han and Lando. Like I really liked the second half of the book. Until we get to about the final three chapters where they have the final battle. Which is, it's all so fucking protagonist-y. Like, Wedge just so happens to be there on a job escorting a ship. just so happened to be there. And then, like, after all the shit goes down at Talon Card's thing, Luke is like, Han, Lando's injured. We need to get back to Coruscant. It sounds like a lot of stuff is going on there. And Han goes, why? When we should go to this shipyard that Thrawn won't be attacking next chapter. And Luke's like, well, but Lando's injured and stuff. We should take him back. And he's like, why? We should go to this shipyard that Thrawn totally won't be at this next chapter. And we will have to take Lando with us because he's the fucking key to beating Thrawn, apparently. So let's go. And Luke's like, okay, well, I guess our friend might die in the back of the ship. So, like, Wedge, Han, Luke, and Lando all just happen to be at this goddamn shipyard. And Bron has a great plan. It's fucking brilliant. Like, it's a really brilliant plan. And the reason he's beaten, because Lando just so happens to know the codes to this bullshit thing. And in the moment, Lando's like, oh, I'm awake from my coma. Let me put in these 4-digit numbers. Bam, Thrawn's beaten because they just happen to fucking goddamn be there. And I was just like, Thrawn should have won that battle. Because for one, like, Wedge, okay, fine. But, like, there's no reason Han and Luke should have been there. They should have been responsible shits and went back to Coruscant with Lando. And Lando would happen to wake up and be like, oh, hey, that's my thing. Let me put in 4 numbers. Haha, we beat Thrawn. And I was like, this is bullshit. This is fucking bullshit. What the fuck, Zahn? And then I was like, it took it away of, like, even if this did happen, Thrawn should have at least won. I feel like even if all this stuff happened with Thrawn, Luke, Han, Lando, and Wedge, Thrawn should have still won narratively-wise to show what a fucking threat he was. Because that would have been an awesome way to end the first book, where even with all the stuff happens, he still wins, he still gets the ships that he was coming for, and he's still a threat. That's how book one should have ended. And I'm just very mad at it. But I've already started book two. Because I need to finish it before April. But yeah, I absolutely agree with you. Like, it's a very bullshitty. And a lot of it is just, like, it's also protagonist-y. Like, they just so happen can do these things. And it just it's very convenient. Like, that's the thing. Everything's very convenient for the characters. And can I also say, my God, whoever, because, like, I found it second in Charles, the complete comic. It's all three of the comics in one book for the entire trilogy. So as I've been reading chapters, I've been kind of looking at the comics and following along with the comics. My God, I can tell it's written by a fucking, it's drawn by a man. I can tell. Because there's a scene where Leia wakes up, and all it says is that she's wearing her under tunic. And I'm thinking, okay, full tunic, you know, she's pregnant, this is very sensible. The entire scene is drawn with her in her underwear. And I was like, she's supposed to be wearing a tunic and she's pregnant. Why is she wearing this skimpy-ass underwear, clinging to Chewie, running away for her life, and then, an hour later, doesn't put on pants to go do an interview, and then by the next morning, when they're mourning their fallen Wookiees, she still doesn't have fucking pants on! Why isn't she wearing pants? And I'm like, this is clearly drawn by a man. Like, I'm like, okay, if you want to put her in her underwear, like, waking up, and, like, I understand they had to run away really fast, but then the final two scenes, time passes. Time passes in the goddamn book. It's the next morning, and she's still in her underwear? What the fuck choice was this?
I never thought it was right. Star Wars' finest hour.
And now I'm reading Dark Force Rising. I have feelings. Can Thrawn Treason just come out this summer so I can have Eli Vanto back and I can have things that I care about more when it comes to my Thrawn? I want my Thrawn back and I want Eli back because Eli Vanto's coming back in Thrawn Treason, and that's not a spoiler because it's in the press release. Hi, Chris.
If it was a spoiler, you'd know the author or something. You'd have some sort of inside scoop.
It was in the press release because I remember crying. Because if you guys remember my Thrawn episode, Eli Vanto is the best boy. He is the best boy, and he's my precious boy, and he's sweet, and he's kind, and I love him, and he must be protected at all times. Best boy. Hi, Chris. Apparently, hey. That's a trigger for me. Wow. I was not expecting that. Sorry. Woo! Woo! I told you guys this is going to be a fangirly episode. Here we go. I just didn't expect to fangirl over that. Whew. I'm warm now. I'm hot. My church shirt's getting all sweaty now. Are you ready to talk about the episode, Chris? You okay over there?
I'm ready. Yeah, I'm okay.
Are you alive?
I'll make it through.
Hey. All right. But Chris, you were right. Like, Heir to the Empire is a lot of
I'm just saying, get ready for more of that. It's sort of repeating cycle.
I really did like the second half of the book, though. That's the thing. I really liked the second half of the book. That's where I felt it really hit its like stride. And a lot of it is because I like characters like Mara Jade and Talon Card. It has nothing to do with... I like Luke with Mara because it's like having an evil Siamese cat stuck with a golden retriever. Because she's like, I'm going to kill you. And he's like, that's nice. Is your ankle okay? Do you need help? And she's like, I'm going to kill you. Don't touch me. And he's like, but you're injured. Can I help? And I'm like, this is really adorable. It's really cute. I really liked those scenes. And I really like Talon Card a lot. He's a really fun character, and it really helped in the audiobook. He kind of has an accent like Diego Luna from Rogue One. He kind of sounds like Cassian. He sounds very suave, and I'm Talon Card, and I have a sexy Spanish accent. And so, like, that's all I could read him as. I was like, ah, you're fine. And so Leia's written terribly in this fucking book. She's written so bad. Okay, I'll stop talking about it. Okay. I just had to give you an update. And I'm 5 pages into Dark Forest Rising, and I actually really like it so far, but mostly because of the last Zahn novel that came out, which was Thrawn Alliances. There's a character named Commander Keemond, and I really like Keemond because he has no fucks to give for Thrawn. He thinks Thrawn is a shitty asshole, and I love him. And I love, because Keemond's like, I serve Vader because Thrawn's a shitty-ass asshole, and he's fucking full of himself, and fuck the Chimera, and fuck Terran Pharaoh, and fuck all y'all, I serve Vader. And so I really liked Commander Keemond's character. And then the opening of Dark Force Rising, there's a stormtrooper that pretty much is like, fuck the guys in the Navy, and fuck the people in white, and fuck the people drinking their tea, Thrawn. And I'm like, haha, it's like early Keemond, I like him already. That's my 5 pages into Dark Force Rising. Gathering forces!
I'm ready for it.
I forgot to ask, or maybe you just didn't. Maybe I just didn't hear you. Did you like the episode?
I did. I have a feeling I didn't like it as much as you did, but I did like it.
Awesome. All right, let's get started. Gathering Forces is the 9th episode of Star Wars Rebels, and it was released on November 24th, 2014. I have something in my throat. Hold on. Much better. It was written by Greg Wiseman and directed by Stuart Lee. Some extra information for you. Admiral Cassius Constantine is voiced by our lovely clone voice actor from Clone Wars, Dee Bradley Baker. Matthew Wood is the voice of the Stormtrooper squad leader when they're going inside the dark base at the end. He was also the voice of General Grievous in the battle droids in Clone Wars and was nominated for an Academy Award for his work on both The Force Awakens and Last Jedi as a sound editor. The tracker that Mr. Grande sticks on the ghost is a piece of technology first used in Kraken's Rebel Field Guide, a role-playing game guidebook published by Western Games in 1991. When the tracker attaches to the ghost, you can see a crested logo on the Phantom's hull. The logo is a nod to the Allied Van Lines decal that adorns the cockpit of the original Millennium Falcon ILM visual effects model. And there's also the number 54, which is a reference to the interstate that winds through the concept artist Amy Beth Christensen's hometown in Kansas. This episode marks the first appearance of Ezra's customized cadet helmet, which Sabine painted for him. The Phantom does not have a hyperdrive, which I was actually wrong on. I actually at one point thought the Phantom had a hyperdrive, and then I was like, oh, it doesn't. Hence this episode. Hence the extremely dangerous maneuver of dropping out of hyperspace mid-transit. This also marks the first appearance of the Sentinel-class Imperial Shuttle in the series. This vessel was designed by the special edition versions of the original trilogy. And finally, Rebels Recon in this episode didn't reveal anything that was, like, really super deep or surprising. They just kind of really talked about, like, yeah, the Inquisitor's a smart villain, and look, we brought back the Fear Nox. But one thing that they did say is that the backstory of Ezra's parents was one of the very first things that they discussed when they were planning the show. So, do you know who is also planning a show with backstory?
Yoda's planning a show down at the public library.
Oh.
Everybody can see. Everybody.
I'm laughing because there's actually an episode of Brooklyn Nine-Nine where they need to go undercover to look up something at a library. So they're like, we have the best cover of all, perverts. And so they walk in dressed like perverts and they're like, click that harder. That's what you just reminded me of, Yoda. Everyone watch Brooklyn Nine-Nine. It's wonderful.
Free internet, too.
I even scared the perverts of the perverts. The real perverts. We scared them. Oh, I love Brooklyn Nine-Nine. I love you too, Yoda. How are you doing this week?
Not bad. Not bad.
That's good. Mm. Well, I have like a question for you, but it also has a follow-up statement. So I'm going to read the question and I'm going to read the follow-up statement and then you can answer, okay? So they come from Aaron Henley, and his question for you is, just what exactly is in the stew that you made, and when did you learn to cook in the first place? And then he says, wait, I know, from Harvey. I mean, Harlene Corman's cooking show from the Christmas special. Stir, whip, 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 stir.
Henley Aaron, why does someone ask Yoda a question and then answer their own question?
Oh, so you learned from the cooking show?
No, learned from Hutts, Yoda did. Hutts' best cooks.
Really? You pour in that swamp water and, like, pick one of the little parasites off of them and just toss it in the stew?
Knock it, do not, until tried it you have.
Do you lift up Mama Hutt's tummy fat and take out the parasites for her and cook them?
Ever seen a skinny Hutt?
That's true. They must have some good cooking, because there is no such thing as a skinny Hutt.
Never trust the skinny Hutt.
So what exactly was in the stew that you made for Luke?
Ancient Yoda secret.
Is this like the robot chicken thing of like unicorn mayonnaise?
Good food. Good food.
All right. Well, thanks, Yoda.
You like the sauce?
enjoy your library trip.
Yeah, okay, yeah, Yoda has to go. Whatever.
I think he was offended there, Hope.
I told him to have a good time at the library.
I'm sure he will have a good time at the library.
He's gonna have a very good time at the library.
I'm not bailing him out again, that's all I'm saying.
Oh, so it's my turn to bail him out of jail now?
You go ahead if you want to. I'd let him sit for a few days, though, if I were you.
We'll let him cool off. He'll have fun dropping the soap.
Yeah, he drops the soap a lot, but he never gets any attention. He just sits in there just like,
yoo-hoo, soap is dropped.
Well, he's so short.
They're all, everybody else is in the other end, other side of the shower, just like.
They're like, we're fine. Hi, Yoda. Come over here, bitches!
Yeah.
All right, so, Act 1?
Yes.
All right, so, remember, guys, this is a part 2 of last week's episode, so...
I love that you write all right, too.
I did write all right. I write all right a lot. So, alrighty. Here's the recap from last week, Act 1.
Sometimes you should write all righty. All righty.
I do. I think I do that every once in a while. Because I also usually say alrighty, Aphrodite. But I usually say that to people. I don't say it on here. Like, if somebody's like, oh, can you do this? And I'll be like, alrighty, Aphrodite. And it's funny because I used to say that all the time at work. But apparently Megan had never heard me say that because I say it physically to people when I'm confirming something, like, face to face. And, like, I went into Christy the next day and I was like, Christy, how often do I say already after daddy? And she's like, every like 20 minutes at work. And I was like, oh. And then I called Megan. I was like, I just say it. Shut up. So already after daddy. So act one. Here's a recap from last week, guys, because this is a two-parter. I'm accidentally highlighting things. There we go. Last week, Ezra was being super moody, and he didn't feel like Jedi training. And Kanan was all like, what's up, Buttercup? That's another thing I say in real life, too. I usually say, what's up, Buttercup? And Ezra was like all teeny bopper, little shaver, going, ugh, leave me alone, Dad. Well, it turns out that it was Empire Day, which is like Papa Palpatine's favorite day of the year, and Papa Palps always orders a Yoda-shaped pinata to beat up every year. Run, Yoda. Well, Ezra started having feelings and emotions about his parents, while at the same time, Alexander Kallus waiting in the wings for you, and my new sexy boyfriend, the Grand Inquisitor, a.k.a. Mr. Grande, are looking for a Rodian named Sebo. And Ezra was all like, oh shit, I know Sebo. He used to babysit me when I was like 5 years old or something. And he talked at me in third person a lot. Ezra approves of him, says Ezra. And our ghost crew ruined Empire Day for my baby girl with a U, Minister Tua, who went full suburban mom on everyone. And Ezra took Sabine and Kanan to his real childhood home. And Kanan tried not to get depressed that he's not really a space dad. Kanan, we know that you're really space dad. You're fine, sweetie. You're okay. And there's Sebo, a monstrosity of his former self with Lobot computers put into his brain. And our heroes were weirdly didn't have many sympathy fucks to give to Sebo. They were just like, oh, he's running into things. This is annoying. And meanwhile, like, Sebo's going through, like, a monstrous thing. They gotta sneak Sebo out of the city because he has an important intel on the Empire. And they were able to get away from the $10 Imperial father without a father, Alexander Kallus. But Mr. Grande is hot on the rebel's tail in a very handsome set of armor that he should wear at all times. But he probably shouldn't wear it all the times because my ovaries can't handle him in that outfit because it's beautiful. But then Sebo's all like, Ezra, I know where your parents are. And Ezra's like, oh, damn. And it's also Ezra's birthday, apparently, but because of course it is, which is stupid because the significant birth date trope was way overused in media, and the plot doesn't fucking change if it wasn't his goddamn birthday in the first place, and it's stupid. Okay, guys, on to this week. Yay! We pick up where we left off with the ghost crew flying as fast as they can away from Grande's TIE fighters. Chopper's down and out because he got blown up last week. Well, he just got shot, so he's out. And Zeb hops on the guns to cover Hera, who's trying to get the heck out of there. And everything's crazy and they're being shot at and it's insane. But none of that matters, because this is all about Ezra time. And Sebo knows about Ezra's parents. And Sabine thinks this is more important than, you know, being killed by TIE fighters. But luckily Ezra is like, this is a personal moment, Sabine, get out! And she leaves. And Ezra turns on Sebo, going, my parents are dead, right? They're dead. And Sebo is upset because he feels like he failed Ezra, and he feels like he failed the Bridgers when the stormtroopers came to take his parents away. And Ezra's all moody, calls him a coward for not protecting his parents. And he's all like, this is your fault, Sebo, and you're stupid, and I don't like you anymore. So, I'll never forgive you. So then luckily we cut through all the teenage angst bullshit, and Hera calls Ezra up to the cockpit to actually help them all not die. And she gets him to start working on the navigation computer so they can get the hell out of there. And Mr. Grande shoots out a tracker and sticks it to the back of the ghost just in case. And it's a good thing he did too, because then Sebo wanders up to the cockpit, fixes Hera's navigational computer, uses his brain, and they all jump into hyperspace. And Ezra introduces Hera to Sebo, but Ezra still has moodies towards the Rodian. Meanwhile, Grande joins up with Admiral Constantine, who has his tracker located. And Grande is all like, I feel the Jedi and the Padawan, and I want them in my grasp to kill them, because I'm always at an 11 for dramatics. And Constantine's like, well, okay then. Should we go? Cool. And they send the Star Destroyer off after the ghost crew. And the team gathers together to fix Chopper and to talk about what to do with Sebo. And Kanan tries to give Ezra the lead on this, because Ezra actually knows Sibo from his past, but Ezra puts on his clone cadet helmet. It's not a clone cadet helmet, it's just a cadet helmet, and acts like he doesn't care. And Kanan drops some Jedi words about how he needs to open up about all of this. And everyone finally confronts Ezra about Sibo. Space Dad says that Sibo couldn't stand up against the entire Empire on his own. And Sabine, finally, because I didn't do this last week, points out that his implants are pretty gnarly. But also, they're not mandatory. Sibo must have volunteered to put them in his head to try and find the Bridgers. And suddenly, Sibo senses that his implants... Suddenly, Sibo says his implant senses that there's a tracker on the ship. Turns out, Grande's new tracker is specifically made to track ships through hyperspace. You know, like we saw them developing in Rogue One. And we also see in The Last Jedi. So fuck you all, you haters who bitch about it. It's right here! And Hera turns on Chopper, who is ready to fight. But they make him look for the tracker instead. And Chopper said, because he just wants to fight something. And that was about the time there was a screen wipe. So I would just said that was the end of Act 1. What'd you think of Act 1?
Yeah, I have a very similar note. It's that was definitely like, I'm like, whoa, this is... Definitely, they were thinking about this, because this is way before Last Jedi.
And it's way before, it's about, what, 3 years before Rogue One?
Well, it was at the same time, roughly, as Force Awakens.
This?
Rebels, right?
Rebels is before original trilogy, hun.
No, I mean when the movies came out.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yes. Sorry,
right.
I thought you were talking
and
about
before,
the timeline
and before
of Star
and timeline,
Wars,
timeline, but before the movies released. Came out.
Gotcha. I thought you were talking
about it was like, I think a year before Rogue One or something, before the movie came out.
Yeah, because Rogue One came out right around season 3 of Rebels, because they knew they wanted to implement Rogue One stuff, but Rogue One wasn't out yet, so they, like, when they brought in the Death Troopers for Zero Hour, they were just like, we kind of know what they look like, but not really. So they had to kind of fib it. So yeah, you're right.
This one just jumps right into the story. Like, it's almost like, I bet, if I recall right, didn't they probably, like, when they do two-part stories of Rebels, they would almost, like, put them out on the same day a lot of times?
A lot of times. I think this one was separated by a week, though.
Okay.
Later
it almost
on,
felt like it was almost meant to be watched back to back. Like, you know, you'd almost go through another commercial and it would just start up again.
I think so. Here, keep talking. I'll look that up.
But it was almost cut like that, you know, because it just like, bam, cuts it. And like the first thing you see is Chopper. And I was like, oh, yeah, that's right. Chopper got zapped. The only other note I have in here is here's more of Ezra just being a dick to Sibo or and. You know, when she was saying, well, he must have gotten the tracker to do this or that. That's a lot of assumption. They could have forced him to have the tracker on because they had him doing something or something. He could have been an experiment or something. Or, you know, not the tracker, but the thing on his head is Lobot Unit. Lobot Unit. I heard Lando was into the Lobot Unit.
Lando's into a lot of things.
But yeah, Ezra's just being a dick to this guy, and the guy's obviously like tortured and impaired and like not him, you know, just screwed up. And Ezra's just like, screw you, Tebow. I don't know. I gotta develop an Ezra voice.
Probably use your Fry Anakin voice again.
Can I just port over? I could just port over the Anakin voice for it. Okay.
Do it. I miss it.
Screw you, Tebow.
Oh, the good old times of Fry Anakin. Put me.
And Ezra's kind of like the reverse Rey too, where he's like Rey's clinging on to the belief that her parents are alive, and he's clinging on to the belief that they're dead.
I have a note about that act too. I have that too. That's a good point though, because I actually, in my note, I said he's kind of like the anti-Luke and Leia, where he doesn't have hope. Or maybe it's in Act 3. I put that note. I put it somewhere. But that's actually a better thing. Like, that's a better point. He's more like the anti-Rey. I actually like that a lot more.
The anti-Rey. But that's all I got.
So just to clarify, just because I looked it up, these episodes, last week's and this week's, came out a week apart.
Okay.
So they weren't back to back. So I did.
Good
like
memory.
Well, I thank you. I had to think about that. Mostly, I think it helps that I write the dates every week. So I'm just like, every time I write, I'm like, this came out on this day. So
she's not a lot of grande in part one, and I notice there's not a lot of notes either. Part one, I wonder where all of Hope's notes are. Huh. Funny.
Oh, you don't even know, Chris. You don't even know.
I have a lot of notes in here somewhere. They're hiding in here somewhere.
Well, my first note is that I actually really like this opening act in the battle and stuff like that. It's written very well because the stress of the fight is also paired very well with the emotions that Ezra is going through. So as the fight's getting like higher in stakes, like Ezra's emotions are going up as well. So it's really nicely written to like the stress of the two is making it even more stressful together. So I really liked how it was written. To kind of go against your point, because I do agree Ezra's being an ass. But I also still stand by my point I made last week that Ezra is written very well for his age. And he is also a teenager going through trauma. And this is clearly a very painful thing. And we know later in the episode, he just doesn't want to face it. And he actually explains it. So like that said, yes, he's being an asshole, but he's also being written really well for his age and as someone who's gone through a trauma. So it's not the most intriguing thing for me to watch. I don't really enjoy watching Ezra doing this. It's not fun, but it's also something I think is done really well because
it makes sense for his character.
It makes sense for his age, and it makes sense for what he's been through. So is it fun to watch? No, I think he's being a little jerk, but it's written well for what it is. So I kind of agree disagree with you. Also, Grande is the only villain who's smart enough to stick a tracker on their ship. I mean, I just started thinking about that. Like, nowhere else in the rest of the series does anybody ever stick a tracker on the Ghost. And honestly, if SIBO wasn't there, they probably wouldn't have found the tracker right
away. They would have been tooling all over the place with it.
Yeah, and he would just keep showing up until they were like, oh, pretty well, actually, we know that Chopper could have found it, because as soon as Chopper came back on, they were like, Chopper, find this thing. But even then, Chopper wasn't looking for it. They had to be like, Chopper, look at this thing and find it. So, I was like, points to Grande, because you're the only smart one to ever use a tracker on the Ghost. Good for you. And my last note, it's not really important, but I actually just started wondering out of curiosity's sake, how many languages does this Sabine know? Because we've seen her speak three languages so far in this show. So then I looked it up, and we know from the show that Sabine can speak Basic, Mandoa, Huttese, Rhodian, Aquilish, Binary, and some Shirilwuk, which is the Wookiee language. So this tiny girl can speak seven languages, and I'm very impressed.
Binary seems to be the language that everybody seems to learn, you know?
Yeah,
well, there's every once in a while you'll see somebody who's like, what did that droid say? But it like people seem to like a lot of, you know, the majority of people seem to talk freely with like R2 units, you know?
Yeah. So I was just super impressed. I was like, wow, Sabine knows like seven languages. That's insane. Well, six and a half because she knows some Wookiee.
Shirilwuk.
Shirilwuk. That's another something stupid about Heir to the Empire, because when they get to Kashyyyk, Leia's like, oh my god, I'm not going to understand everybody. And like the Wookiees are just talking to her, and she can understand them. And finally she looks at Chewbacca and goes, you have a speech impediment, don't you? And he's like, yeah. And so that's why like she can't understand him, because he is so busy. You can just talk to Wookiees except for Chewbacca, who has a speech impediment. I'm like, what? What the fuck, Zahn?
Timothy,
Zahn, I love to hate you. Zahn, I really love your Canon Thrawn novels. So far in your Legends, I hate them. I like and dislike them at the exact same time. Because I really liked the second half of the book. The first half was bad.
Oh, so all Chewie needed was speech therapy. Great.
Apparently, and then we could have all understood him always. But no, he has a speech impediment, Chris. Anyway, that's all I have for Act 1. Did you have anything else?
And Han Solo understood that speech impediment.
Yeah, well, we know he knew Wookiee language, so.
Yeah, that's all I got for part one. I'm going to let that whole thing sink in.
Chewbacca was killed by a moon. What is the legends, Chris? What are legends? I don't understand. We're going to get so much hate for this. I'm going to get so much hate about Bash and Anderson entire. Bring it on. I can't wait to read it.
Somebody defend that Chewie had a speech impediment. Otherwise, you could understand them. Go ahead.
Bring it on.
I want to see it.
I want the feedback. I actually really want to see this. So bring it on. Act two.
Act two.
Where are we? What am I doing? What am I reading this on? Gird your loins. Actually, no. Act three. Gird your loins. Act 2. Our heroes find the tracker, and luckily it's on their side ship, the Phantom. And they want to drop out the Phantom out of hyperspace while the main ship continues on with SIBO. And Sabine's like, y'all crazy, because that's a hella stupid and dangerous plan. But Kanan has the plan! Because he sensed Mr. Grande, he knows that the Inquisitor can sense the Force users and track them even if they dump the Phantom. So to protect SIBO, Kanan wants to leave with Ezra and land at Fort Anaxes, which we saw a couple episodes ago when Hera and Sabine were stranded there and they took on the Fear Nox. And Ezra's like, this plan is stupid because it's helping SIBO. And Kanan's like, sigh, take a deep breath. And he goes, teenagers. But that's the plan, so Ezra has to suck it up in the galley. Ezra is glaring at SIBO, and he's not happy about any of this. Why didn't he just go to his bedroom then? I don't know. Sabine comes in and confronts Ezra about his parents, saying that he needs to talk to SIBO while he has the chance. Ezra doesn't want to talk to the Brodian, and he admits that he doesn't actually know if his parents are dead or not, and it doesn't matter to him anymore. And Sabine is like, of course it matters, Ezra! But Ezra says that if he had the hope that his parents would come back for him, he would have never have learned how to survive on his own. Well, Kanan was eavesdropping a good bit of that conversation, and he opens the door to get Ezra to start the mission. And Ezra doesn't say anything else to SIBO, and it makes Sabine have a sad face, you bitch! And Space Dad and Space Son hop into the Phantom, and they get ready to separate. With one last chat with Hera, they detach the Phantom, and they drop out of hyperspace, and it looks fucking awesome. And then the boys head to Fort Anaxes. Grande senses that there's been a change in the Force. And Admiral Constantine seems all nervous around Grande, but he says that the tracker has the rebels dropping out of hyperspace. And Grande says that they need to go after them at once. This is a side note, I'm saying it now. There's a really cool scene in a young reader novel that summarized this episode that would have been right here. But it's not in the episode. It was added to the book later. So I'll talk about that in my notes because it actually is a super interesting scene to me that I wish was put into the episode, but it wasn't. So we're moving on, but I'll talk about it in my notes. Anyway, Space Dad and Son get to Anaxes, and Ezra's like, so what's the plan? And Kanan's like, remember last time we were here and one of them almost ate you? And Ezra's like, yes? Why? And Kanan is going to teach Ezra one way or another how to connect with other people and animals. And this is how Ezra learns best. On the fly, and if they're going to survive, then Ezra has to do it. And finally, Simba admits that he's afraid and says, I'm just trying to be brave like you. And Papa Mufasa goes, Simba, I'm only brave when I have to be. Being brave doesn't mean you go looking for trouble. Okay, yes, I'm quoting The Lion King here. But it's pretty much the same fucking conversation. Because Kanan says that everyone's afraid, and it's okay to act brave, but everyone's always afraid at some point, and admitting that you're scared is the first step. They pretty much just have the conversation from The Lion King. And they land inside the hangar, and the Fear Nox are like, oh, a snack! Hi! And they watch the boys. And Kanan takes the tracker off the hangar bay, and Ezra is really scared at the moment, but he has really good reason, because last time they were here, one of them ate his face off. And the Fear Nox start coming out of the darkness. And Ezra is panicking because he's trying to connect with the Force. And he's like, Force, please work. Force, please work. I force you to force, work. And it's not working. and Kanan appears, and he's trying to connect with the animals too, but Ezra's fear is making them ignore Kanan. And Ezra finally admits that he is not afraid of the Fear Knots. He is afraid of knowing the truth about his parents, and he begs Sibo for forgiveness, and he apologizes. And in that moment through the Force, Sibo is on the ghost, and he hears Ezra, and he says he's sorry as well. And now that he has let all his fear go, Ezra, for the first time, connects with animals, which becomes his trademark power for the rest of the series. So this is a really big moment, you guys. End of Act 2. What'd you think?
I really liked the part where they came out of hyperspace. It reminded me of a hyperspace mess up from the first Star Trek motion picture.
Yeah, it's really cool. God, I can only imagine like what that does to their body, like the whole force and the pressure of it, man.
It's hard to say what, like for one, you don't really know like science wise what hyperspace is, so it's hard to tell what was happening, but you could tell it was super intense
and not pleasant.
Yeah. It was very much like they try to go into warp in Star Trek, and they hit a wormhole, and it's very, and everybody's all warped and distorted. It reminded me a lot of that.
I will say, because I don't want to say too much about future seasons, but they use a lot of the same effects in future seasons when they bring in, is it the Indictor? It's the ship that can rip other ships out of hyperspace. I forget the name of the ship because I didn't look it up because I just thought of this, but they use a lot of the same like visual effects too, so I'm glad that they kept that continuous through the show.
Hyperspace itself is just always one of the best effects ever to come out of Star Wars.
Do you remember during the Droids arc when hyperspace was red?
Yes.
And I kind of still wonder why they made that choice for that arc only when every other time in Star Wars it's blue.
Maybe that time they were passing by some sort of thing that affected them or something, and every once in a while it's red. Who knows? That's what's great about Star Wars is you can just fill it in because the science does not really matter. If it did matter, they would have mentioned it and fit it into the story somehow. But all my other notes, really, I mean, this segment and episode just have a lot of, like, it just has an Empire Strikes Back feel to me of like the chase through the asteroid belt but the music is like right out of episode 4. It's all just sort of variations on episode 4, but then as I was thinking that as I was watching it, then all of a sudden there's like vocal chorus stuff which is very Jedi. So this scene just had sort of a little amalgam of having the broken hyperdrive was also very Empire Strikes Back. But it was weird with the music and everything. It was just sort of like evoking all three of the original trilogy. But that's all I got for it.
All right. Well, my first note is first it's about the scene where Sabine comes to talk to Ezra. Because so far in the series, Ezra's been the one that's been seeking Sabine out. And she's been kind of like, oh, that's cute kid. Get out of my room. And I think this is the first time in the series where she actually goes to him first to make sure he's okay. And so I noticed a few things in the scene that was going on. This is when I was saying last arc that Luke is, Ezra's kind of like the anti-Luke and Leia in this. But now I actually like your point better, that he's more of like the anti-Rey. I actually like that point a lot better. Because he doesn't want to have hope about his parents. Because he thinks that not having his parents made him stronger. Where it's the opposite of like, using your example, Rey. The hope of her parents coming back is her fuel. And I thought that was a very interesting kind of tie. It's the anti-hope.
Anti-hope.
And we also, like, when Sabine was in the scene and she was like, of course it matters that you find your parents. We know in later seasons about Sabine and her family. I won't get into spoilers because we're not in later seasons yet. But because we know what happened with Sabine and her family, it makes sense why she's pushing Ezra so hard to care and find his parents.
Mm-hmm.
Because of what happened with her. And I never really noticed it before. I was like, yeah, this makes sense why Sabine is like, you need to find your mom and dad. Do it, Ezra. Your parents are important. Because I was like, this poor girl. She understands. You're very
Going through this series a second time, you see how it was planned out better than it seemed like it was.
Yeah.
There was more. They knew what they were doing from the beginning.
And my last note about this scene is, this is actually the first real time where I feel like Sabine and Ezra are acting more like siblings. Because up to this point, they haven't had these kind of moments because Ezra clearly has had a crush on Sabine. But in this, like, they're not talking as love interests. They're talking as people. And, like, she's there to help him because she cares for him. And he is trying to protect himself. But, like, he knows that she cares for her. And it's more of that family dynamic that's building where... Earlier in the show, it was like Ezra clearly has a crush on Sabine. Later in the show, I feel like they're more siblings. And this, I felt like, was the first big step towards that because it was... I feel like it's the first time they actually were talking together as people where it wasn't like, hey, Sabine, I'm going to save you and stuff like that. And she's like, that's cute, kid. Get away from me. Like, this is the first time I feel like they actually really talked to each other as just two people, not potential, like, Ezra has a crush on her.
Yeah, he's... Like, the only time he gets all, like, with her is when he's all cocky and revved up and stuff. So he's out of sorts now, so he's not feeling romantic. Yeah, it's one of the first, like, honest scenes between the two of them yet so far.
He's not feeling cocky.
Because he has a penis.
Yes. Oh, you. I don't want to think about Ezra's penis. Kanan's penis I'll think about. Ezra's not my jam. And he's really young. Ew. 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 All right. My next point. In this week's episode of Things I Didn't Notice the First Time I Watched Rebels. So there's that scene when they're preparing to drop the Phantom out of hyperspace. And Kanan's talking with Hera, and he's just like, yeah, we're getting ready to leave. And she's like, that's cool, we're getting ready. Ready? I was looking at Ezra in the background, and I didn't notice it before, but as Kanan is talking with Hera, he's in the foreground, so he's the focus point. But as I was looking at Ezra, he just had his last moment to have a chance to talk to Sibo, and he didn't. And if you watch him in the background, he actually, like, covers his mouth, and he shakes his head, and he's holding himself. And he's just, like, holding himself with his hand over his mouth and just shaking his head. And it's so little, but it says so much. And I never noticed it before. And it was a very nice moment because Kanan's not paying attention to him. And he has a very private moment to himself. And it was really nice. All right. This is what I was talking about in my summary when I was like, there's a thing in a young reader novel that I wish...
Oh, right, right.
So this episode was last week's episode, this week's episode, and maybe the previous episode. And I put in a young reader novel. But they added in the young reader novel a scene. And the reason I found this out because I was reading up on Constantine to get ready for the show notes. Admiral Constantine, who's driving along with Grande. But they talked about the scene, and so I was looking for it in the episode because I was like, I don't remember this happening in the episode. That sounds awesome. So I was looking for the scene and it wasn't there. And I was like, where is this? So I started looking into it. And it sounded like something that was like catnip to me and right up my fucking alley. Because one thing I think Rebels does really well is show how the Empire undercut each other and how the Imperials, like the Navy Empire people like Constantine, views the Force users. And that's what the scene was about. So in the scene, Grande says that he can sense the Jedi and Padawan, just like we see in the episode. And in the extra scene, Constantine has to stifle a laugh, and he kind of laughs at the Inquisitor. And he says that the Empire wiped out all the Jedi years ago. And Constantine says that he doesn't believe in mystics and stories. Well, then Grande reads Constantine's emotions, and he scowls back and says to Constantine that the rebels would be his undoing. And I was like, that's an awesome scene that could have been in this episode where Constantine A laughs at the Inquisitor, and Constantine, and then the Inquisitor pulls a, I'm reading your emotions, and they're gonna kill you. I'm seeing that through the Force now. I'm like, that's a really fucking awesome scene, because I would have loved to see that, because one, I think about this a lot, and Megan always brings this up, and I try to defend it, but it's really, really hard to defend. It shows how the Empire has wiped out the memory of the Jedi, but then I remember it's only been 15 years, because we know that Ezra's 15, it's his birthday, and this takes place 15 years after the Empire is formed. But that also just really shows, like, the power of the propaganda that's, like, running through the Empire, because only 15 years later, it's not even really a full generation, so someone as old as Constantine would remember the Clone Wars, but that's now considered stories and mystics. And that's crazy.
Yeah, but the Jedi used to be running around all over the place, and then all of a sudden nobody was seeing any anymore. So after, it would probably only take like 4 or 5 years before people are like, well, I guess the Jedi ain't coming back, you know?
Please tell that to Megan, because we fight about this a lot. And like, so I just thought that would have been a really cool moment to put in there. And two, I just want more Grande in general. Just give me all the Grande. And three, Grande's not wrong here. Because not to spoil too much from the season 3 finale, he's right. And a lot of season 3 in general is why what happens to Constantine happens. And Constantine brings it on himself, just like Grande said it would. And pretty much Grande was like, you're going to be your own demise because you don't believe all this stuff or the rebels, and you're downplaying them. And he's right. Like, all everything that happens to Constantine in season 3, Grande calls in this children's book. And I was like, why isn't this scene in the episode? It would have been so good.
They were probably working on a script that had stuff before they clipped it down to, you know, for airing.
I know, but I wanted
Or they give the writers a little bit of leeway or something.
I know, but I wanted it, Chris. I wanted it. I didn't get it, and I'm sad. Now I have to go find this goddamn book just so I can read
that one. It's in your brain anyway.
I know. I could probably find it for $1 at Second Charles, because all the kids' Star Wars books from Rebels, now that they're not new anymore, are usually like $1 to $3 at Second Charles. So I could probably just keep an eye out for it and find it. So I have to keep an eye on it now. But yeah, it just sounded like a really cool scene that I wish was here. My next note is, I like the kind of callback to Rise of the Old Masters, because we know when Kanan started teaching Ezra that he recognized that Ezra learned best on the fly, because they were running from the Grand Inquisitor and they got to the hangar door and he grabs Ezra and he's like, we're lifting the door. And Ezra's like, I don't know how. And he's like, we're learning right now. Let's do it. And so I really like that Kanan recognizes, like, that's how Ezra learns best. But also, we're seeing Kanan becoming a better teacher, because he's adjusting how he's teaching. Because we saw last week he was trying to teach Ezra how to connect to things with the Lothcat. It just wasn't working. But Kanan recognizes that this isn't how Ezra learns. So he's adjusting his method, and that's just showing that Kanan's becoming a better teacher too.
Yeah, he's a lot more confident in this situation.
Yeah, it's funny.
As a teacher.
This is way more dangerous than throwing a rock at a Lothcat.
Right, exactly, exactly.
And he's like, well, Ezra, if you don't do it, we're going to die. Let's go. And Ezra's like, what? What do you mean we're going to die? And he's like, you better do it or we're going to die. Let's go. It's actually a really funny scene. I also noted that Ezra has a really good reason to be scared of the Fear Nox, because one almost bit his face off in Fear Out of Darkness. I hope I manage to get... Oh, okay. Again, this is just another nod towards the future. I want to put a pin in this, and I hope I remember it, because we don't really want to talk too much about future seasons. But I will say that in season 3, that Ezra being scared and trying to connect with the Fear Nox has a lot of similarities to when Kanan was scared of the spiders on Chopper Base. And I like it because they kind of did a flip-flop on that one. So here we're seeing it here, and we know in the future that Kanan's going to go through something similar. And it's a nice setup for that, and like having the Master and the Padawan swap places, but also have this very parallel story as well. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I think I do.
Okay, I'm going to give you guys a spoiler warning. So if you don't want a spoiler for season 3, Skip ahead like 30 seconds. So 3, 2, 1, spoiler. It's when Kanan is blind and he's not connected with the Force anymore and he's scared of the spiders. And he doesn't want to face his blindness and face this new challenge, just like Ezra here doesn't want to face this new challenge of having to address his own pain. So both of them are struggling to adjust to pain, and they lost their connection to the Force. So it's a really nice parallel between the two.
I forgot about that.
Yeah. So I was first thing I thought of. This is why we do a podcast for together, Chris, because we notice things that the other one doesn't notice. I just notice character things that are sexy. You haven't even gotten to Act 3, Yoda. Just wait, Act 3. You don't even know. All right, my last note is, now that I think about it, the moment that Ezra has this connection to the Fear Nox and they're all just sitting there waiting for it, like listening to him, that's probably the biggest change that we've seen in his character so far. And because, like, yes, that becomes his trademark ability for the rest of the series. But in the episode before this, Ezra, like all the episodes leading up to this point, Ezra is still a bit self-centered. And even after he joins the Rebels, he's still very closed off. He's only thinking about himself. But in this moment, when he opens up and faces his pain and he forgives Ezra, he forgives SIBO and he releases it, he makes that connection for the first time. And after this moment, going forward, Ezra becomes a lot more open to all people after this scene. And that's even other people like the Zago and Hondo and like everybody else. Like Ezra becomes the driving force to be the connection to people in general for the rest of the series. And yeah, there's times where he falls back and he's self-centered and stuff like that, but that's normal. He's a teenager. It's fine. But pretty much from here on out, his entire character changes because of this one moment, and he starts focusing outside of himself. So this is actually when he has that moment. It's a really big moment that impacts the rest of the series.
I didn't think of that that way, but yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, everything changes now. Like, this is the reason that he opens up and he can be, like, close to, like, people like Hondo. Because, like, everyone else is like, we don't like Hondo. He's a pirate. We don't trust him. And Ezra's like, give him another chance. It's fine. Like, and they're like, Ezra, he's going to hurt you. And he's like, if he does, then he does. But we need to trust him. Like, it's this moment here going forward that changes the rest, how Ezra is the rest of the show. I just spoiled that Hondo is in the show. Without giving a spoiler warning. Sorry, anybody who's, like, watching this for the first time. I'm really bad at this.
I guess so.
Well, we said from the get-go that we're looking at Rebels as people has already looked at the show to see how they're setting up the show.
We're trying, guys. We're trying.
Trying. We're really bad at this. I'm sorry if you're watching the show and I just spotted the Hondas in it. So, I have to prepare myself for Act 3. Do you have anything else for Act 2?
No, I'm all ready for Act 3, I guess.
All right. I'm going to open a brand new drink. So, brand new drink, because I'm going to need it. I'm going to wet down my willy. Wet down my whistle is what I meant to say.
Well, yeah, I was just going to let that one go.
you know,
free willy.
You can leave that one in.
Thanks.
All right, you ready?
I'm ready.
Hera and the rest of the Ghost crew meet up with a ship that's part of the bigger Rebel Alliance, and it's Fulcrum's ship, and Sabine and Zeb are miffed that they don't get to meet Fulcrum this time. And Hera gets Zeebo ready to go, and she notes that he seems better, and that Fulcrum's people will help him with all the information in his head. And Zeebo admits that he joined the Empire and let them put the implant robot thing on him to try and find the Bridgers. And he knows their fate, and he knows what happened to them. And Hera wants him to tell her so she can pass that information to Ezra. But none of that is important, because here we go. Meanwhile, Mr. Grande's Star Destroyer shows up at the asteroid belt around Nexus, and he lands his shuttle on my base. The base. And oh my god, my ovaries, Chris. He strides up that shuttle, looking like sex walking, walking between the stormtroopers like the goddamn motherfucking god he is. And oh, and the stormtroopers are there too, but whatever, because it's beautiful! And Grande wants to take the rebels alive, and they move out into the dark base. They pull out their flashlights, and there's Kanan and Ezra kneeled down with the Fearnox, and they're meditating. And our heroes lift their hands and stick the Fearnox on the troopers. And the stormtroopers panic and shoot wildly. But Grande is on point, firing on all sexy gears, going, "This is cute and all, but it's not cute enough. This plan is stupid and you're going to lose." And Kanan's like, "Well, I guess I gotta do this myself." "Oh yes, Kanan, I would do him too, it's fine." And he whips out the lights, his lightsaber, and they start fighting, while Ezra continues to meditate and send Fearnox after the stormtroopers. And it's a really awesome fight, but it's also quick, because the Inquisitor is just far more trained than Kanan. And that's just normal. And he throws Kanan and knocks him out, which makes Ezra snap out of his concentration. And Ezra grabs Kanan's lightsaber and he declares, "You're not going anywhere near him!" And yoink! Grande takes the lightsaber from Ezra and goes, "I believe I am." And then he kills all my lady parts, Chris. All my lady parts are dead. As he walks with both lightsabers dragging on the ground, making sparks. And he's making sparks in my heart. And it's currently in the background of my wallpaper because I found it on StarWars.com. And I swooned. And he's all menacing and hot. And I'm destroyed. And Chris, you better goddamn use this as the image for the episode, because, oh my god, I'll kill you if you don't. I don't know where you live, but I'll find you. And Grande is ready to end all of this, and he throws Ezra with a force to the end of the edge thing, because apparently there's a cliff inside this hangar, and he starts taunting the kid like, "Oh, the darkness will swallow you up. You will fall to the dark side. Kanan will die. Your friends will die. There's nothing you can do." And he's having a grande old time with it. I actually told Megan I would put a grande old time joke in the podcast, so I told her I would. So that's a Megan thing. Even though she doesn't listen to the show, so why does it fucking matter? And the then the blueberry stands up, and for the first time in the series, he becomes the Blackberry. Dun, dun, dun. And just as Kanan is waking up, Ezra taps into the dark side, and Grande senses it too, and he drops all his taunting and goes total on guard. And Ezra summons big old angry mama Fearnok, pissed off that they've been killing her kids, and she rises up from the depths of this hole. And Kanan's like, "Oh shit." And Grande's like, "Double oh shit, oh my god." And he turns on his double lightsaber, because now he has three of them, and this is a triple saber problem. That's kind of a Sherlock Holmes joke. I hope someone got that as a three-pack problem. And as he fights the Mama Fearnok, Kanan runs to get his space child, who has passed out from the power of the dark side. And Mama Fearnok knocks Kanan's lightsaber out of Grande's hand. And gathering up his space kid, Ezra tells Kanan that he feels cold. And Kanan's like, "I know, you're okay. We're gonna be okay, let's go." And he's comforting him, because Kanan Jarrus is the best goddamn Jedi and the best space dad ever made. And Kanan uses the Force to snatch back his lightsaber, and Kanan makes a break for the Phantom with Ezra on his back. This is the part that I laughed at and watched like four times, because it was fucking hilarious. Grande yells at the Fearnok, he just goes, "Ah!" and it runs away. So that's how he beats it, and I died. Because he's a nerd! And Grande sees that Kanan is escaping with Ezra, and they hop in the Phantom and fly their asses out of there while blowing up the shuttle and they get out. Apparently, they get on the Phantom, they leave, but somehow they get past Constantine's Star Destroyer above the planet, even though the Phantom doesn't have hyperdrive. They just left that part out about how they escaped the Star Destroyer. Let's not think about it too much. And Grande sulks, saying that Papa Palpatine and his dude-bro Vader would not be pleased with him. Once safely away, Ezra is in the fetal position, and Space Dad comes back and he sits with him. And Kanan explains that Ezra opened himself up to the dark side. Even though it was trying to save Kanan, Ezra's fear and anger took over. And Kanan apologizes for not preparing Ezra for it, because Kanan is the best Jedi! And he makes it to the, and they make it back to the ghost. And Hera's like, "Ezra, I need to talk to you about some things that Sibo told me." But Kanan says to give Ezra some time to himself. Sabine goes to Ezra, and she has the holodisc that she picked up from Ezra's house last episode. And she cleans it up and puts it in, revealing a picture of Ezra with his parents. And it's Ezra's birthday present because someone finally gave Ezra a birthday present. The end.
Why do pictures look like drawings? Why wouldn't they just look like a picture of Ezra with his parents?
Because it's a cartoon show?
I guess, yeah.
I mean, it's a cartoon show? I don't have really an answer to that question.
I guess I didn't get...
It does look a little cartoony, though. I do what you mean by... No, but it looks a little
like
bit
a
more
sketch.
Cartoony. Yeah, it looks more cartoony than the rest of the animation, so I do get what you're saying.
I guess I didn't get it from the show as much. I didn't pick up that Ezra is using the dark side to scare up Mama Frylock, because I was just like, why is Caden saying no? They were turning all the other ones against everybody, you know? They were using them to attack the stormtroopers and stuff. Why? What's the difference between using a big one? But I guess if he's using the dark side to do it, makes a lot more sense why Caden was freaking out.
I do like the thing that they keep, like, constant through the show, is whenever they talk about the dark side, they feel cold. And we'll see that throughout the rest of the show. Whenever it has anything to do with the dark side, they'll be like, I feel cold. And I do like that they kept that throughout the show.
My only other note is this. They're doing the big tease on Ezra's parents. And I don't understand why. Because the only person who cares right now is Ezra. We don't know Ezra well enough to be invested in, like, really, really, like, wanting to know what the deal is with his parents. We don't know him well enough yet to even be as to be curious enough about it for them to keep us hanging with it, you know?
I get
keep
that.
Keep dangling it.
I get that, because I mentioned last week it would have been nice, because we heard a little bit of, like, their voices through the Force. And I mentioned last week how I kind of wish they did that a little bit more, or even if they showed us, like, a video or something, like, he pushes a button and it projects a video of his parents, just something to make us, like, a little bit more of an emotional hook. And this is a long-standing story. Like, we're going to keep coming back to this to, like, I think it's either season 2 or season 3 that we're going to keep coming back to this. And Ezra's parents are an emotional thread all the way through. Like, I remember them bringing up his parents in the finale. So I think a lot of this is, like, this is part of Ezra's journey, but also I think this is also something that makes Ezra kind of very Anakin-like, because Anakin was so different from the other Jedi of his time, because he knows his mom. He lived with his mom till he was, like, 9 or 8 or however old he was. And so it was really hard for him when they were like, you need to let go of your past and your things. Anakin's going, I love my mom. So I actually kind of think it's building it a little bit of an Anakin parallel, because they're very similar in that aspect, that which makes Kanan and Ezra such different Jedi, because they embrace their attachments. We know that Kanan's attached to Hera and the crew and stuff like that, and Ezra has this attachment. And Kanan's not sitting here going, well, you need to forget about your parents, like all the other Jedi did to Anakin. He's like, yeah, love your parents, man. Whatever, bro. Just, you know, don't let it consume you. Well, and he doesn't even say that. Like, why am I saying that? Like, Kanan never does that. So I think it's one of those things to kind of define, like, this is why these Jedi are different from the previous Jedi that came before them. Because we see that with Luke, too, because Yoda was like, you don't need to worry about Han and Leia and all of them. And Luke's like, no, they're going to die. Bye.
it's a more of the writer's thing. It's like, why do they keep this going? And the secret of Kanan's parents is, oh, not yet. And then, like, and then they dangle it, like, for the third time at the end of it. And it's just like, we don't care enough. Stop dangling it. You can dangle it once and okay, I'll go with it. But, like, it was just weird. It was like, you know, it's like, that's, you know, it's just not something I felt that they were really needing to ramp up, you know, with the audience. You know, it wasn't like whatever season 12 of South Park, by the time they were like, who are Cartman's parents? By that time, everybody really wanted to know.
Yeah, I guess I can kind of see that. I mean, just, it could have been handled a little bit better.
Just kind of a quibble. But that's all I really got for part 3.
Well, for me.
Is it, yeah. Take a deep breath.
Let me get a sip of my drink.
Oh, actually, like, oh, okay, you don't really have an awful lot of notes for this one. I was expecting, like, I was expecting to scroll down, like, 3 pages.
So my first note, it's a bit of a side note that doesn't really have anything to do with the episode. And it came from a conversation that I had with Megan earlier this week. So it kind of ties in the episode, but not quite. And we were joking about my fan crush on Thrawn and the Grand Inquisitor. And she was joking that, saying, like, I have a thing for aliens. But the more I thought about it, I kind of do when it comes to Star Wars. Because I find the alien characters a lot more interesting a lot of the times. Because so much of Star Wars is focused on the human heroes and the human villains. The majority of them are, like, the white guys of Star Wars. And Star Wars definitely has a problem with casting women, like, the lead women, as brunette ladies. Like, every major woman character in all the movies have been a white brunette lady. Like, holy crap. And so I started thinking about it more of, I like the stories around the aliens, and I find them more fascinating because they're different. And, like, here's a few examples. Like, I was reading about the Powans, because the Grand Inquisitor is a Powan. And, like, Powans live to be 700 years old. They're called the Ancients. And Grande looks pretty young, but he's probably, like, 100 years old, or, like, 70 or at least, because they apparently age really slowly. And so I started thinking about it, is he's probably a lot older than most of the characters. He's possibly older than, Palpatine. He could be, possibly. And, like, he probably has all this knowledge, and he's seen all this other shit that probably a lot of people haven't seen. I like Thrawn as a character because he's an alien in a human world facing xenophobia and speciesism. I love Hera as a Twi'lek because the Twi'lek race is usually enslaved or used as prostitutes, and she ends up becoming a badass fucking general. Zepp's survived a genocide, so he has that deeper story. So, like, to me, like, the alien characters of Star Wars have all these deeper stories that are coded for a lot of real-world issues that we don't find these stories really with a lot of the human characters, and the alien characters have them. So I just find them far more fascinating, and in a lot of the stories that we see dominated through Star Wars are human stories. And I wish we got more of, like, just alien stories, and maybe there could be, like, one token human following along and stuff like that. But it just, again, just makes me think of, like, it made me think of, like, how much, why I tend to go with more characters like Hera and Zeb and Thrawn and Grand Inquisitor, because I find the aliens far more fascinating in Star Wars than I find the human characters.
I would say at least you fall for, you know, bipedal humanoid characters.
Yeah, and not even in a crush way. Like, I find Hera and Zeb incredibly fascinating. What am I talking about? Hera Syndulla is beautiful. And Zeb's adorable. But, I just feel like the alien characters are more richly written. Like, they have much richer stories around them than a lot of the human characters that we get.
I think that's always so in science fiction and fantasy movies, you know, because they're almost somewhere between, like, Chewie was the great, he was somewhere between a pet and a creature, and a human, and then it's just more facet. Like in Star Trek, you know, there's always a character like Data or Mr. Spock that ends up being the most popular character because they're more interesting because they're different.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like a lot of the alien stories also, like, code well into, like, a lot of our real world stories too.
Right. Right.
And so I just think they're better done. That being nicely said, fuck, Grande is beautiful in this entire goddamn act, and I love him, and he's gorgeous, and get me a fan because I died in this in my catnip. Fuck.
Yeah, it was also just beautifully executed visually, you know, it's in an underground dark cavern.
Like, just him walking with the blue and the red lightsaber on his white skin, making kind of like this blended purple on his face. Like, it's all so beautiful, and his eyes are glowing, and, like, God, it's all good. I also like the scene where Grande is tempting Ezra with the dark side because it mirrors the Emperor tempting Luke in the original trilogy, but it also gives a lot of nods to, like, Ezra's further struggles with the dark side, too.
I like that if you're tempting someone with the dark side, it seems like if you tempt them on too early, they're going to be like, no, you know, you have to wait till they've had time to get like
into that mode.
Yeah. Degraded a little, experience more life to, you know, to get close enough to that mode. Like Ezra wasn't going to be like, the dark side, huh?
Yeah. I also like that scene where he's tempting Ezra too, because Grande is just like taunting him and taunting him and taunting him. And then he senses the shift in Ezra and he senses that fear not coming. And you can tell he has that, oh shit moment. And he gets down and crouched down. And I like that because Grande is smart. Like he's not an idiot. Like he's like, something's coming. Oh my God.
Well, at first he was probably like, oh good. Maybe I can tempt this kid in the dark side. And then he was just like, oh shit.
Yeah, and I love the oh shit moment because he's backing away. And I love when he turns on his lightsaber, so he has like three sabers because this is a three saber problem. And he's just like, oh,
it's
God.
A giant monster. Yeah.
Monster. By the way, that's my next note. What a cool scene where like Ezra is just standing there and everything's lifting around him. And you see this creature just rise up behind him. That's a beautiful scene.
It's like when we were talking last episode of the movie, I keep wanting to say Fantastic Planet, Forbidden Planet, and they have an id monster in it. And now this is totally sort of Ezra's id monster, you know, it's fueled by his anger.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I know it's for plot, but my God, Grande should have just like stabbed the Mama Fear knock in the face and been done with it. But no, he has to fight it stupidly and then plot has to happen.
I'm glad he didn't kill her.
Yeah. But still, I mean, honestly, if this was Vader, he'd been like, oh, a monster, stab in the face. Okay, we're done. I mean, Vader would have just stabbed it and like just went after them. No questions asked. So my next note is all Ezra needed was a birthday present.
Oh.
It made everything better. Sabine gave him a present. He was fine. Okay, that's me joking. That aside, I like that Sabine did that. I think it was a really good moment for her. Because, again, so far in the series, she's been a little bit distant from him because he's been crushing on her. But that was a really nice moment for her. And it was a big moment, again, like we were saying, I think it was Act 2, where they're actually finally addressing each other as people for the first time in the series. So I actually really liked that moment that she did that. My next point was, I understand that I enjoyed this episode far too much because of character crush reasons, but whatever. That's what really fueled a lot of this for me. I rewatched several of the Grande scenes multiple times, and I have the texts and the videos that I was sending to Megan, and we were laughing about things and just being fangirls together. And that was probably a big fucking reason why I just had so much fun with this episode because of character crush reasons. And I understand that. And I'm okay with that. And I'm fine.
Yeah, you know. Whatever floats your boat, man.
Yeah. Though my favorite thing is I wrote this entire episode is catnip for me, Megan. And she wrote back, what would Thrawn say? In big letters. She's like, you're cheating on him. What would Thrawn say?
WWTS, Hope.
I know. My last note is, I feel like the only thing missing from this episode was the resolution with Sebo and Ezra, that they didn't get to talk. And I don't remember, so don't quote me on this. I don't think we see Sebo again. I think this is the last time we see him. I think, because I'm not positive. He might pop up again. But even then, the more I thought about it, was like, it wasn't a very fulfilling resolution between the two of them. But, you know, we don't always get fulfilling resolutions in life. You know, sometimes there's a thing between a person where you're like, I'm mad at them, I'm not going to talk to them. And then it never gets resolved because something happens.
Yeah, I don't know if Ezra was still going to not be a jerk to him. So it's probably better off this way.
I think that after he let it go, that if Sebo was still there, he would have sat and talked with Sebo. I really do. But I actually really like that it was not resolved, because that's life. Sometimes things just don't get resolved and you don't
get to apologize. That's life.
Yeah, and you don't get to always apologize, and you gotta live with that sometimes. And if we never see Sibo again, Ezra's gonna have to live with being a dick to him. And I think that might be a reason why he's so open towards other characters going forward, is how, because of how he treated Sibo. And he, because he wasn't going to give Sibo a second chance until all of this happened. And we see in the future episodes that he gives multiple characters second chances when they when he probably shouldn't. And I feel like a lot of it is because of what happened with Sibo.
It's possible. Possible. Yeah.
That's my theory. But that's all I have for this episode. Do you have anything else?
No, you want me to score it up?
Score this puppy up, Chris.
You're going to be disappointed in me. I only gave it an 8.
I'm not going to be disappointed in you. I had way more fun.
I liked it. But I didn't like it as much as the last episode, but I still liked it. But I didn't feel it was especially, like, you know, for I didn't feel the forward momentum that you got out of this.
I had a different kind of forward momentum.
Yeah. Trying to put it nicely, Hope.
For me, I had so much fun watching this episode, and I blame Megan, because a lot of it definitely came from our role play together with the Grand Inquisitor. I know that's a big reason why I liked this episode way more than I probably should. That said, like, putting that to the side, to me, this episode still has a lot of really good things. I wish they put in that scene with Constantine and the Grand Inquisitor, with how the Empire views the Force users. That if that scene was in here, this probably would have bumped this up even higher for me, because I thought that would have been a really good scene. But that said, Ezra just grows leaps and bounds. He's has moments that's going to affect the rest of the show. We see Kanan continuing to be a good teacher, and we see Kanan doing the best he can. God, Grande is so sexy and smart and smarmy, and I love him. And Sabine is really great in this episode, too. We're really seeing her come out of her shell, because she's also been kind of guarded, too. I mean, we saw that in Out of Darkness. Like, she's been kind of guarded as well. And we're starting to see Sabine come out of her shell. And so, overall, I just thought it was great. The entire end fight scene was just catnip for me the entire way. I loved everything about the episode. I gave it a 9 out of 10.
I figured that's where you were going.
Yep, yep. If they had that scene with Constantine and Grande and it was done well, this could have easily been a 9.5 for me.
Wow, wow.
I really would have liked to see that scene where...
So early on, like, and... Yeah.
I don't think I've had anything lower than a 7. This is going to be really hard picking favorites by the end of the season.
It is going to... This is going to be a hard one to pick high scores on.
Yeah.
Because it only gets better, too.
Yeah. Well, as always, we'd love to hear your feedback on iTunes, Twitter, or on the Two True Freaks Facebook page. This week, our feedback comes from the Two True Freaks Facebook page for our episode covering Fight or Flight.
All right, the first one we got here is from Aaron Henley. He said, what I originally assumed was the first quote-unquote filler episode, despite what Dave Filoni claimed as there not being any filler. This is a cute little episode. I love how it plants a seed for the season finale, but what I've always wondered is what happened to it after that. The crew has both a standard tie and a tie advanced, and yet we never see them again. We could have had more of the crew in their own ships leading a bigger space battles, but we never did. Oh, well.
I actually have a theory about this, because we do see later in the show where they steal a bunch of old Y-Wings. And Hera says, and Ezra's excited. He's like, yeah, we have Y-Wings. This is awesome. And Hera goes, oh, these aren't for us. This is for another Rebel cell. We got it for them. So I could probably assume that, like, because of what the Ghost crew and stuff do, they don't really need TIE fighters for what they do. So I could probably see that those TIE and the TIE Advance they got went to another Rebel cell, but that's more suited for that. That's
right,
my theory about what
happened. Right, to a Rebel spy or something that needed
yeah.
one.
Yeah, so, like, that's my theory. That's how I rationalize that, too. So.
All right, next we have Paul C. Kelly.
Ooh, yeah.
How much would your minds be blown if in episode 9 we see a spray-painted TIE approach out of hyperspace and the Resistance thinks it's First Order at first, but then it starts taking out First Order ships and we get older Sabine? Oh, yeah. If I got to choose between owning a TIE fighter and an X-Wing, I might have to go with the TIE fighter.
There's actually, for one, that would blow my mind if Sabine just popped out of episode 9 and it was like her and Ahsoka and they were like, what's up, bitches? I would scream in the theater. Like, I would just scream.
You might have to be restrained. Yeah.
I would just start screaming. But
you might have to tranquilize or dart you.
I will say there was a joke where I forgot what, it's one of those shitty websites that just put out like clickbait. And they were like, episode 9 spoiler, a Rebels character is going to be showing up. It's Ezra Miller. And everyone's like, the actor? And they're like, no, the Ezra Miller from Rebels. And they're like, Ezra Miller's not in Rebels. Do you mean Ezra Bridger? And they're like, yeah, that.
Yeah, that guy, Yoda's brother, Adoy.
And I just had to laugh at it because they were like, Ezra Miller. And I'm like, the Flash is going to be in it? Or Credence from Fantastic Beasts? What is this about Ezra Miller? Why? So that clickbait got taken down really fast.
They're getting all mixed up with their clickbait. Yeah.
Yeah, so pretty much everybody was like, Ezra Miller's not in Rebels, but good try. So.
All right. We got one more from Aaron Henley. He's and Paul C. Kelly had just said he would go for a TIE fighter if he had to have a ship from Star Wars. And Aaron Henley said, if it was a TIE interceptor, absolutely. The standard TIE is just too blocky for me. I'm even going to give him a little Paul C. Kelly here with, I prefer nice, sexy lines in my starfighters. Oh, yeah. All right.
Oh, we forgot to pick candy again.
Now the greatest part.
God, there's so much, Dario.
So much candy to choose from.
If you don't know what we're doing... Chris hates American KitKat. He's stupid. And our friend Dario is a flight attendant, and he sends us candy from all over the world to review. And what are we even going to do, Chris?
All right. I know what I want to eat.
What?
It's called Broderick's.
Broderick's. What color is it?
It's a small orange. And it has, like, a hippie dude and then, like, a nerd guy in a Batman cape standing next to... a candy.
I'm just gonna start taking stuff out of Broderick and it's orange. It's one I found a Kinder. That's not it. Kit Kat Chunky.
It's orange. It's more like around the size of like a Reese's peanut butter cup.
Oh, so it's smaller. Wait. I found it. Okay.
It's got some weird packaging.
Okay, so let me find this on the thing.
It's Irish.
It's what?
It's Irish.
So...
this is our first Irish candy? This might be our first Irish candy.
I think we've had one other, because I feel like we made some... I feel like we've had one other Irish candy. So, alright. This is really... it does. Mine has, like, Jesus and a hipster on it. And it
it's
says
like some
that...
sort of Jesus or hippie, but he doesn't have arms or a body. He just has legs coming out of his head. And then it's got a guy that looks like Milhouse and in like bathing trunks.
It looks like Milhouse trying to be a hipster.
Yeah, he's got like a Batman cape on and he's got a bee on his swim trunks, too.
And it says the Cake Crusader. Oh, it's a wafer, I think. No, it's not a wafer.
Yeah, it's like a caramelly wafer shortbread thing.
Oh my god.
Oh my god, look at this thing. I thought it was going to be rectangular.
Oh my god, it's so good. Oh my god.
Wow.
Oh my god, the shortbread's amazing. It's so moist.
It's almost like, it's not even as much like shortbread. It's almost like graham cracker crust on a pie.
Oh my god. Oh my god, Dario. Oh my god. Even if it's, even though we've had these before, if you go back to Ireland, please send me more. I just want to eat those forever.
These are good. Yeah.
Oh my god.
These are like something, these are like almost like homemade. They're even like kind of cut like irregularly. It's almost like a homemade cookie that somebody made. It's good.
Oh my god. Good job, Ireland. Oh wow. Oh my god. Thank you, Ireland, for that. And thank you, Dario. Oh my god. Oh my god. So guys, if you ever go to Ireland, get the Broderick, because that's amazing. That's the best thing I've put in my mouth all there.
Yeah, don't let the doofy hipster packaging fool you.
Holy shit. Well, that's all I have. Where can people find you, Chris?
You can find me at twotruefreaks.com. That's our website. And that's where we post all our podcasts. I'm not going to say what it's about, but I heard another whisper of a rumor of a new Two True Freaks podcast brewing on another a topic that we don't have yet. So keep your eyes out for that. And always keep your eyes out for Jay Guys and Jedi. you can also find us on iTunes. And of course, all you got to do is go and search for Two True Freaks in any of these places. You can go to Facebook. We have a group on Facebook, Two True Freaks, where you can see all our episodes coming up if that's the way you want to see them. And we have the Two True Freaks Cantina on Facebook also, which is sort of a forum to go and talk about any topic. It doesn't just have to be episodes of the show. We can talk about anything there nerd related. And we are also on Twitter, run by the inexhaustible Gene, the podcasting machine.
I'm going to do this in a Paul C. Kelly way. Ready?
Sure.
I'm not prepared for this. I said I was going to do it.
You seem like you were prepared.
Do-do-do-do-do-do. Yeah, Gene.
Oh, yeah. And I think that's it. Where can they find you, Hope?
You can find me at Jagaz and Jedi. I run our Twitter account. You can also find me on Twitter at Hope Molinax. I also have my website, geekygirlexperience.com. If you like what I do there, you can hit the little Ko-fi button and find me a coffee. I also write fan fiction. You can find my work at Archive of Our Own, or AO3 for short. My name on there is Chaos Lydia, and my main story is Forces of Gravity. It's a Thrawn fan fiction. And I also beta read Valkyrie Strike for Megan, and hers is up there too. I also, if you want more Grande love, I wrote a story called Fire.
Fire.
Yeah, I'm a little distracted because Anthony Daniels says that big news is coming tomorrow. So I bet it's a trailer and or a name for episode 9.
Ooh.
Yeah, and Good Morning America said that they have a big announcement coming tomorrow too.
Well,
so it is February, so it's sweeps month. So
everybody was scandalized because they weren't going to put it. I guess they didn't buy time for the new trailer on the Super Bowl.
Yeah, but I'm not too mad about that.
Well, no, I'm looking at it this way. If I'm the Super Bowl ads are the most expensive ads in history. They don't need it.
Yeah.
All they gotta do is drop it on YouTube and it will go everywhere instantly. They don't have to pay $10 trillion to get that trailer out. It'll go out on its own. They can put it on one website and it'll be all over the web within an hour, you know?
Yeah.
Man, so. This candy is good. It's like a cookie. It's like a homemade cookie.
Dario, I have a request. I mean, if you go back to Ireland, can you just get me some? Not even a review on the show. I just want some to eat.
It's almost like, could you get the recipe for this candy?
Yeah.
And the caramel is not like gooey caramel. It's like cakey caramel. It's
The hardest thing is that I have kind of, because like my dad is very intrigued by my candy. And to keep him from stealing it, I always have to save him some to give to him. And this is so little, and it's so hard not to eat the rest of it right now. I'm just staring at it.
Well, you got to tell me which ones you give to your dad, so then I'll take the ones that I have, and that's good, because there's people I'd like to give some candy to. Eat the candy on my own time.
I just usually eat half of one, and I, like, because we usually get bars, and since we usually have bars, I usually just eat half of it and just give him the other half. But this is so small, and it's so delicious.
There's some monster bars in here, too, coming up.
Oh my god, I know. We should probably, like, instead of saving all the big bars for the last, we should probably, like, do every other week a big bar, so.
I know there's going to be weeks when we're going to be hungrier.
Yeah.
Especially in the spring, the weather gets nice for us. It's already nice for you, whatever. Whatever.
Well, join us next week. What do we have next week? Oh, next week is fun! We're going to be getting into, like, force stuff. It's Star Wars. It's all force stuff. Oh, next week, Yoda, get ready. Next week is you.
All about the sports stuff, I am.
All right, you guys. We'll see you next week.
All about the base. No rebels.
Visit our website at twotruefreaks.com. Two True Freaks is always spelled TWOTRUEFREAKS.
You can email Two True Freaks directly at twotruefreaks@gmail.com.
Two True Freaks and all of its excellent affiliates are available on iTunes, and you can choose to subscribe to either the entire network if you wish, or pick whichever individual shows you want to follow. We have so many shows to choose from, there's just bound to be one that appeals to your particular fandom. Just search Two True Freaks with an exclamation mark at the end, space, and the number 2.
You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks.
Dumbass.
If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about Two True Freaks?
If you've enjoyed our show, please, won't you take a moment to rate us on iTunes? That helps others find the show, too.
Thanks for listening.
And join us every Monday for new episodes of
Two True Freaks.
That rings a... Wait a minute. I got it in the tip of my tongue.
Come on.
Oh, golly, I'm not even... Let me see. Oh! Alexander Dumbass! Oh, Henry Dumbass!